This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Doctor in the House, brought to you by AIA Vitality.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I am Meera Sivasothi. Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist, in the studio with me. It is a Friday. How are you today,
George? It is a Friday. Indeed, I'm very excited.
About what?
I'm excited about the show. I'm excited about, you know, now we even have a promo before the shows to have Doctor in the House, brought to you by AIA Vitality.
Yeah, they like you a lot. So they've decided to put their money behind you.
Well, it's money contributing toward betterment.
A good cause.
Good cause.
Always
actually,
a good
know,
cause, George.
Actually, awareness and that sort of thing. So, well, you know, very pleased. And of course, I'm excited about the topics we're going to talk about. And of course, excited about the event we're going to have tomorrow.
Tomorrow, absolutely. We'll come to that in just a short while.
Indeed.
But, you know, there was so much talk, George, about this article, you know, in the news.
I know. So much that I have to go on hiding for the last few weeks.
About, you know, a gentleman who had a ring stuck around his penis and then, you know, the bomber had to come, you know. I mean, it's just, I don't know, George.
Dramatic.
And from what I understand, it is not a recent trend. It's had a long history to this sort of practice. What is going on? How long has this been going on for?
Okay, right. Before we begin, I mean, I must ask, you know, Meera here. It's like, you know, I got a message on a Sunday morning from you. Would you like to elaborate what message you sent me?
Sure, why not, George?
Right.
Yeah, just.
Right. Meera was asking me, why would somebody wear a ring in their private part?
Yes.
That's
please
right.
Give me a good reason, George, because I cannot understand why was my message.
That's right, well, no, because you thought it was for decorative purposes,
yes,
right?
You did. No, I didn't say it was for decorative purposes. You just said it was a way of not allowing robbers to get to your ring on your finger. Not funny, George. How long has this been going on?
Well, actually, you know, if you really look
and you
back,
also said I need to go out more because I didn't know why.
You didn't know why. Just use your imagination. I thought you were having a blonde moment again.
I don't know. My imagination didn't go that far.
No. Okay, right. Actually, if we really look back and see how long has this gone back for, actually, the Greeks also describe something along this line of some sort of penile ring. And then it really get into the scene of, let's put it, for sexual performance and in the Jin dynasty in the Chinese emperor's kind of era, probably about 500 years ago. So we're looking over those times. We have the jade made kind of ring, essentially just put round the penis at the base of it. And so during that time, they probably understand the physiology of an erection. So essentially what happens during an erection physiologically is that a tactile sensation or any arousal can actually get gush of blood going into an erectile tissues, corpus spongiosum, and essentially just kind of like corpus cavernosum, essentially just trap the blood in there.
Which happens normally.
Okay. When the blood is trapped in there, then there will be a valve activated and then to stop the trapped blood being released back into your main core body. So that's the mechanism of erection. And we actually scientifically only worked this out in kind of 1970s. But clearly in the Chinese emperor era 500 years ago, they already worked out something along that line. So if you imagine a lot of blood going into an end organ, and in order to trap it, then you create a constricting ring, just like a tourniquet. So imagine that a lot of people have their blood taken. There is some sort of device that actually wrap around your
arm, a band-like,
mm-hmm. And that is a tourniquet, and that is the effect that the ring is creating. So,
but it happens naturally anyway. So
that's
why
right.
do you need a ring for?
So for somebody who actually does it, they will allegedly have more enhancement of erectile rigidity. On the other hand, some actually reported better sexual satisfaction, so on and so forth. So some people even have a ring that actually is constricting at the base of the penis and the scrotum. So that is a penile scrotal ring. So it comes in various forms, and it can come in a plastic rubber band. It can come in a plastic constricting ring. It can come in a jade. It can come in a metallic ring. And it can come encrusted with diamond or all sorts of things.
Okay. So here is my moment again. Aesthetics aside.
That's right.
Why would you want to put a ring there?
So there are men who perhaps suffer from erectile dysfunction. In the 60s, this will be a device called the vacuum device. So this vacuum device will actually attract the blood into the penis. And then in order not to lose that erection, you will put a constricting ring at the base. So I would imagine the gentleman in Penang either suffers from erectile dysfunction or perhaps suboptimal erection, or perhaps just being misguided that this is something that will give him extra pleasure during sexual activities. So those are the three possibilities I can imagine why this man ended up using a ring.
Is it lack of understanding? Because obviously it's erectile dysfunction. You would think that, you know, there are medicines that you can take.
That's right. Okay, right. Okay.
It just sounds a lot simpler.
So, you know, in the newspaper article, I wrote down oral treatment that's available. So yes, a lot of people are asking me about the oral treatment, what you're talking about. Yes, indeed, there's medicine. So I think there are two factors to this. You know, if this gentleman suffers from erectile dysfunction, there might be a lot of taboo, embarrassment, going to see a doctor, and then, you know, there might be cost factors involved. All these barriers actually prevent them from going to see a doctor. So as a result, they probably go to a very simple website. You know, these days we get spam mail all the time, and the spam mail will come over and actually ask you whether you would like a penile enhancers or something like that. And these are the product they might get sent when they order it online.
But isn't that dangerous?
Indeed, it is dangerous. And in fact, I have three reasons to suggest that, you know, in order to get consultations or treatment online is dangerous. Number one is that many men who suffer from erectile dysfunction actually has got underlying problems. For example, high blood pressure, cholesterol issues, depression, and also other issues such as cardiac issues that is resulting in depletion of the blood flow, diabetes, for example. And then so they lose an opportunity for a doctor to make a proper diagnosis of the causes of their erectile dysfunction. The second reason is that a majority of these people will be enticed with a treatment. Let's say if they order a medication, these medication may not be the genuine article. And also, how do you know what is the dosage that you take? Yeah. You need to be properly counseled about the dosage, the timing, the side effects, and you don't have any of these. And nobody's taking any accountability if you encounter any problems. And some of these medication mixed with another one can be lethal. Mm-hmm. For example, you know, sildenafil, which is a blue pill, if it's mixed with a medicine that you take for angina, for example, it's absolutely lethal. So, you know, why put your life at risk?
Yeah. And some of these doses, they come in like five times the dose that what is actually approved for when you buy online.
Indeed.
You don't know how much is actually going into each one of it.
And that's right. You know,
catastrophic, you know, actually.
Absolutely. And in Singapore, there were a few cases that when these counterfeit medications were produced, they were mixed with other medications. For example, the sildenafil, which was the blue pill, actually, when it's during productions in the backyard, were actually mixed with diabetic medications. And people ended up with coma and died in Singapore because of these counterfeit medications. So, you know, is it really worth putting your life at risk whenever you order online? And lastly, you know, something like this would happen. You know, Mr. X from Penang might think that it's so embarrassing to see a doctor and ended up buying a ring and not knowing what to do. Mm-hmm. Because one of the problems about the ring is that it's a constricting device. When this constricting device is left for too long, you can imagine blood going in that cannot come out, and this organ will continue to get bigger and bigger and bigger, and it becomes so rigid you fall asleep after, you know, sexual activities, and that is recipe for disaster, because then that will cause the penis to be necrosed. Necrosed means the blood supply to the penis is impeded, and sometimes people even lose their penis because of that. So it's definitely not something that is worthwhile doing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know which is worse, Bomba coming or going to see the doctor. Just go right. See the doctor then, you know.
Well, Bomba coming and disclose to the rest of the country.
Yeah, right. Exactly, right? And also, in terms of when you talk about the penile ring, I mean, it has a long history, George. So,
indeed. So
I don't see what the problem is.
Well, indeed, but the long history in the past were either a jade that, you know, if the jade is causing constriction, you just use a hammer and smash the jade and the jade would break up.
That's pretty costly, isn't
it? That's, well, you know, it's costly rather than getting the Bomba.
Okay.
I mean, that would be... Now, well, I can think of which one I would go for. You can go for cheap jade, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Right, okay. Or alternatively, you can use a rubber band if you're really absolutely desperate.
My goodness,
that's right.
George.
I know. Right. You know, things men would go through.
Absolutely.
Right. Well, know, yeah, no. So, you know,
it's
majority, you know, well, you know, if you were my era, and if you were my age, kind of watching Austin Powers, International Man of History, you know, Mystery, if you remember one scene that they were debating whether this penile engorger from Sweden, whether it belonged to Austin Powers or not, that exactly is a vacuum device. And then so that will suck in the blood into the external genitalia and cause a constriction.
We'll come back
that's
to
right.
the vacuum device. Well,
now, that's another
thing you're just mentioning in passing.
What is it? And get all the listeners all very, very curious.
Vacuum device coming
that's
up
right.
next on The Big Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. If you've just joined us, it is our show with Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist. It is a Friday. We're going through one of the articles that came out a couple of weeks back on penile strangulation.
Yes.
I think we all read about a gentleman who got a ring stuck in his penis and had the fire brigade actually come and have to remove it. I was actually quite confused as to what this was all about. And so I sent George a text the next day when it came out. And I said, why on earth would anybody do something like that? And of course, he took the mickey out of me before he actually explained what was going on. So we've spoken about the history and how, you know, this whole penile ring thing is not something that's new. It goes mm-hmm. back very long in history. But you, before we left for the break, you said something about a vacuum device.
That's
what
right.
is that?
Well, essentially, in the 70s, in fact, in the 60s, when there were no medications for erectile dysfunctions, we tried to use mechanical ways of overcoming these erectile issues. And then so the vacuum device essentially is just like a cylindrical device that actually fit outside the penis. And a vacuum pump will be generated in order to create blood going into, you know, to create a situation where the blood will be drained into the penis. And as soon as that is sufficient, and then a constricting device is put in the lower part of the penis, in the base of the penis. At the moment, many of these vacuum devices are sold as a penile enlarging device. You know, imagine you have to do this every day in order to get that extra, you know, 2 millimeter girth or something like that. So it's all a gimmick. Don't believe in it. And it's very uncomfortable doing it. Why would people do that? But it is being sold. However, sadly, many men perhaps has problems with more severe erectile dysfunction due to conditions such as severe diabetes, poorly controlled high blood pressure and something like that. And even the blue pills doesn't work anymore. And so we will advise patients to use these devices in order to overcome sexual dysfunction.
Yeah. I think what's coming through most, what I think is most pressing is that the fact that you have an erectile dysfunction, it could be signs of an underlying health condition.
Indeed.
And, you know, I think cardiovascular disease is one very high on the list.
That's right. I mean, so, you know, 20 years ago, I mean, believe it or not, this year, the blue pill actually is 19 years old. That kind of shows our age, really.
Yes.
So I do remember it was released in 1998. And those days, obviously, there's a lot of taboo. And then, but these days, we really begin to realize that it is a precursor for a heart disease. And then because all the comorbidities like smoking.
I mean, it was developed for heart disease.
Correct.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, prior to 1998, this was a drug that initially was designed for high blood pressure and also the drug designed for angina. But obviously, they didn't work and they created another new era in treatment of
erectile dysfunction. Which was an accident, actually.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. So it's called the accidental drugs that actually makes Pfizer a lot of money. And then people call it the Pfizer riser.
Okay. And why did the fire department have to get involved?
Right. Okay. You imagine that you're stuck with that. In fact,
why don't hospitals have this equipment to cut metal rings, for
right.
an example?
Whatever for? You know, why would a hospital? I mean, you know, I worked in a county in the UK called Essex. I'm sure you have heard.
Oh, you have
Essex.
So many stories
that's
about
right,
Essex.
About Essex. So in Essex, because we have this so often, so we do have a device, a metal cutting device
at the hospital.
At the hospital. So we we don't have the amusement or the privilege of calling the fire brigades. That's right, to come in. So I guess when we get more of these incidents in Malaysia, in Penang and in KL, for example. In fact, sometime last year, we had the similar incidents in University of Malaya, and that created a lot of hoo-ha and a lot of excitement, a lot of laughter.
University hospital?
That's right.
So do you think hospitals should be equipped to deal with these sort of accidents? Well, would you call it an accident?
I will call it a misfortune. It's intentional in many ways, so it's not an accident. It's an accident.
It's an act gone wrong.
That's right. It's a mischievous outcome, really.
No lah. Some people genuinely.
That's right. Possibly
have a problem.
So I mean, I think at the moment we probably get this in a big hospital probably once or twice a year. But you know, I must confess, we do get this quite often, and most of the time the doctors are able to somehow maneuver the ring out of the way. So with a little bit of soap and some lubrication gel, and also a lot of aspiration. Imagine we put a big needle in to suck the blood out to deflate the offending organ or the victim's offending organ, and then that somehow can just get things out. But sometimes we do encounter problems that we're unable to do that and have to get the fire brigades in. And sometimes when it is left for too long, men do actually have the ultimate price to pay.
Does that happen very often?
Oh, well, it happens probably once every 5-6 years or so. We might end up amputating the penis.
So what do you do then? Reconstruction?
Unlikely, because you know the end organ itself is deprived of oxygen, is completely useless even if we reconstruct it. So we just end up amputating the penis.
Do you think the sale of these penis rings should be regulated? If it's been happening, you know, from ages ago. Do you think it should?
Well, I think for sexual health drugs and devices, it's extremely difficult to regulate. Number one is that whenever you get a lot of barriers, taboos, there's always this underground method for people to get hold of devices. I think show like this will highlight the danger. It's all a bit of ha-ha laughing matters. I mean, after all, at the other end of the spectrum, you get somebody who actually suffer the embarrassment. Obviously, with a bomber coming in and everything like that, and in ultimate price might actually lose their manhood. So it can be a serious matter.
So if people are who insist on using a ring...
To be Lord of the Ring.
The things you come up with, George, I can't believe it. You know, you watch too many movies.
That's right. Well, that's quite good, right? Lord of the Private Ring.
And then he
ring.
Takes credit for his own joke.
Okay, well, you're going to get people ringing in now and say that it is actually not bad at all.
I don't know. So what is your advice if anyone is insisting or insists on using a ring?
Use a rubber band. Or buy the cheap jade.
Because it comes off easily.
That's right. And then, you know, Well, actually, to be truthful, I mean, majority of these devices, they are medical devices, and then there are medical companies who sell them. And vast majority of these rings are actually a silicone or plastic ring.
Are medical devices.
In fact, I have them in my clinic to obviously demonstrate to men who don't respond to treatment of the medications. And this is something that I would use in my clinic. So I wish I brought one in now.
No, thank you, George.
That's right.
Why would I
use
one?
Well, you want to see it, right? Okay, yeah. Because you've been using your brain to imagine what it would be like.
I just imagine a ring.
That's right.
That's it. Just a little bigger than the one that fits on your finger.
That's right. Okay, well, slightly bigger.
So there are medical devices. So you can go and get made... ring.
Indeed, yes.
Okay.
But they are not metallic in nature. The majority of these. The one from what I read, the Penang case, actually even have these ball-bearing sliding devices. So this guy clearly had used it before and then clearly enjoyed the previous experience. Okay.
But are they available? Can you buy it off the shelf?
Like in the metallic one?
Yeah,
the medically endorsed ones. Yes, in many... Well, in Malaysia, you probably have to go through a specialist to do that, and that most major hospital would have it. However, in the States, if you, let's say, go to a chemist, you order one with prescription, it's widely available.
Okay, all right, that's good to know. So what would your advice be for people who are toying with the idea of using a penis ring.
To be Lord of the Rings. I think go to see a doctor. You know, don't lose the opportunity for a doctor to find out why you suffer from the condition. And also, 20 years down the line, after ED has become a little bit more mainstream, a treatment for erectile dysfunction and sexual dysfunction, there is really no reason to believe that there will be judgment, stigma, and barriers. And you never know. A simple medication might just solve your problem. Don't need to resort to something that will end up having a visit from the bomber.
Fantastic. Okay, so now we have concluded that story. We're going to move on to the next one, actually. Very interesting headlines in the BBC. And this is researchers from UK and Japan. Mm-hmm. And it read, how an individual's sperm swims against all odds.
That's right.
Through fluid to reach the fallopian tubes.
Oh, I love this
And
one.
It has been revealed. It's all about rhythm. And it's also got to do with a mathematical formula. You know, of course it caught my eye, right? I mean, sperm swimming, mathematical formula. What's this all about, George? I mean, what did you think? Could you give us a summary of that research?
Right, okay. Well, fantastic stories and about sperm swimming technique.
I
all
loved
down
it,
to
actually.
Simple, you know, mathematics. Okay, if you just imagine that the situation at the moment, we always assume that when we look at somebody who has got infertility issues, we will do a test called semen analysis. And the WHO came up with three parameters that actually measure the semen quality, obviously for fertility purposes. Number one is the number has to be more than 15 million per male. Number two is that the motility, the activeness has to be 40% and above. Number three is that the morphology that actually has a head and a neck and a tail has to be more than 4%. And this is perceived as normal semen analysis. So all this time we make these assumptions that the sperm are a bit dumb, right? You know, so you just need a lot of them and they swim in all directions and then some swim backwards into towards outside of the vagina.
And well, if you remember, I was reading the other day, if you're 45 and above, it's probably swimming in circles with two heads.
That's right.
What does that even mean?
So what
morphology,
this study...
Motility all gone wrong.
That's right. Well, what this study is showing is that it's actually the sperms has a specific rhythm. It's just we don't understand the rhythm. So basically, in the past, if you go to see an embryologist, you come to my clinic one day when we actually analyze semen quality, or when I do the sperm hunting exercise, essentially for men who has got no sperm, a condition called azoospermia, we do a small operation and then we use microscope called microscopic epididymal sperm aspiration, or we'll directly go into the testicle and actually do testicular exploration and sperm extraction. And then, so these are quite intricate operation. I love the operations. And then we will just find these little sperms and then the embryologist will look at them and say, oh, whoa, whoa, we have many, many of them which has got head, neck and tail and they're all swimming. And majority of time, they just tells me that they are swimming, but they're active. And then most of the time, we just assume that these sperms are swimming purposelessly, you know, has no direction, they're a bit dumb, you know, they just kind of like knock their head around, and then pregnancy is by chance. And the study from York and Japan prove otherwise. In fact, all these different directions that they're swimming, some of them swimming backwards with two heads, actually, they're following a mathematical formula. So isn't that
poor
amazing?
Fellas have been, you know,
that's right.
Criticized
that's right.
for been, swimming aimlessly.
Just like most men, they're misunderstood.
So are you saying that you are governed by a rhythm as well?
Indeed.
Mathematical formula.
That's right, that's right. So he's probably working out, you know, Mark Zuckerberg will probably work out that, you know, this is AI. So, you know, if you use a you know, computer to understand the actual... In fact, this is what they will do from now on. Yeah. Because what they will do is that... In the last 30 years or so, in fact, the first test tube baby is now 38. Louise Brown is about 38, 39. It's nearly 40 years. And then we just assume that we just need one healthy sperm. We need them to be active, to extract, and then put in an egg, and that will solve the problem. But now, understanding that the sperm itself swim in the rhythm, when we work out the mathematical formula, we can actually make them do anything we want. Isn't that amazing?
It is amazing. But, you know, this story also tells you how these poor sperms have a pretty hard time.
Oh, men have a hard time full stop.
Getting to that one egg.
I know.
You know, I've always wondered, more than 50 million sperms, embark on this journey.
Correct.
To fertilize one egg when a man and woman have sex. And I'm thinking, what is that? Why do you need 50 million? But after
you only need one.
Yes, you only need one, right? But what happens to the rest? It's a pretty interesting journey. You want to go through that.
Right,
okay, George.
Right. Obviously,
I mean, many die on their way. Such sacrificial lambs.
Absolutely. It's a story of a man's journey, really. It's like, you know, if you
rubbish.
Imagine, that's right. Okay. Each ejaculate.
Stop feeling sorry for yourself, George.
Each ejaculate will have between 2 to 4 mils, which is a typical volume. And then each mil should have 15 million. So if you have about 50 to 60 million that actually being released, right, okay, into a female genital tract, and then majority of them will just get stuck around the very hostile environment of a vagina. The vagina is a very robust organ because it needs to withstand a lot of bacteria and it needs to withstand a lot of viruses. So it's quite robust. And then so the actual ejaculated sperm, it seems very hostile to them.
Yeah. So just getting from the vagina to the uterus is
quite a struggle.
It is quite a struggle, and that's where you lose most of.
That's right. I mean, so you're looking at, you know, out of the 50 million, only 10 of them will actually reach the actual, you know, cervix itself and get stuck to it and swim on. So
they have to battle the white blood cells.
That's right. Okay.
Who are waiting to kill them. And I'm wondering, why would the white blood cells recognize the sperm as the enemy?
Oh, why? Right. Okay. You imagine that the sperms and the eggs actually are only hosting half of a genetic material. So like, for example, a man who had a vasectomy. And then so we breached that line, which is called blood testicular barrier. When you breach that barrier, then some sperm might get into a bloodstream. And then some people might react badly to it. Their immune system will recognize that, oh, this is only half of your genetic material, so it's completely foreign. Mm-hmm. Let's attack it.
Right.
And then so some men might have reaction to it. Some women, you know, there was once that we had Dr. Wu, Ken Wu, who came in, who actually said that there's some women who get anaphylactic shock yes. whenever they actually get sperm allergies. And that's the whole principle, that the white cell is a defense system, recognizing that these are foreign bodies, they need to be get rid of, and then that's the reason why they raise huge amount of white cell in order to fight off a majority of these. But mind you, the men themselves have other mechanisms. The prostate, that for many, many years has been just thought to be an organ that supply nutrition for the sperm to swim faster, actually has all sorts of devices up their sleeves as well. They have enzymes to dilute and dissolve all sorts of hostile material, the mucus inside the cervix and mucus around the vagina, so that that will neutralize a lot of acidity so that it will be a little bit more friendly for the sperms. So it's like the battle of a miracle to be created.
It is. In fact, one of the scientists expressed that if you think about it, it is really a miracle.
Indeed.
How this whole process is a miracle.
That's right.
Because after they arrive into the uterus, after battling, you know, the...
The marauder
everything.
Or maroundering white cells,
exactly.
kind of like eating them away. On the other hand, they have all the enzyme trying to eat them up and dissolve them. On the other hand, the prostate secretions trying to make it friendly and then open the doors. And one or two sperms might just slip through the neck and going into it and race for that holy grail, the egg, to make the baby.
Yes.
This is the beauty.
I've always said you watch too many movies. We'll come back and continue this discussion on the whole idea of the movement of a sperm when it is released and how it reaches the egg to be fertilized. We now know that it's all about rhythm and how they actually make it to that egg. And what is the future of knowing this? We'll come back and find out more. Up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Doctor in the House, brought to you by AIA Vitality.
Good afternoon and welcome back to the show. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. It's our Doctor in the House program and Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist in the studio with us. We are discussing, we discussed two topics today. One is, of course, the penile ring earlier on. And now we're on the sperm swimming down to simple math. Sperm swimming, yeah, all of that is now down to simple math. The head and tail movements of the sperm made patterns similar to the fields that are actually found around magnets. And that's how sperm move. Into
so,
get into the fallopian tubes.
If you imagine magnetic field there, some of the field works actually goes backwards, right? Yes. So don't be so harsh on those poor sperms.
Yeah. You were harsh on them. We didn't know that they were swimming in all sorts of directions. But you were trying to get your head around why some of these sperm behave the way they did. But now you know that it's because they almost form around magnet-like magnets, right? In that field that we're discussing. So finally, they reach the fallopian tubes and they're fed and they're nourished there. But while they're there, the egg then has to be released at exactly the right time to welcome this winning sperm. If not, the journey has been all in vain, George.
That's right. So I guess in some way, it is the Darwinian theory about survival of the fittest, right? Okay. Because clearly, the ones that are headless or with two heads won't make it too far. Mm-hmm. And then clearly the ones that worn out after a while, you know, don't get too far. So you always get that few that heading towards the eggs. And then that is how nature selects its fittest.
Okay. So it's a treacherous journey, if you're wondering, for these poor sperms, all 50 million of them, maybe even less.
That's right.
That's a lot of death of sperm in the process. What is the importance of something findings like this, George?
Right, okay. The two reasons why it is important, right? Okay. Number one is perhaps one of the survival of fittest actually is this rhythmic movement. So let's say, for example, if they are following certain mathematical formula, then when we observe the sperms enough, then we will work out, we'll simulate that movement, and then therefore we can actually manipulate it so that the survival of the fittest can be enhanced. I think that will be something that will be interesting. So I imagine probably 10, 15 years from today, rather than looking at the motility, we are looking at the pattern of motility. So the ones that are swimming in the rhythmic manners that follows a mathematical formula actually are the ones that are more healthy, and the one that's completely lost, the one that are just having a bit of lie down, and then those are the ones to avoid. So I think on the Petri dish, when we see the ones that actually move in rhythmic manners, and those are what we want to pick. Because at the moment, we're just looking at whichever one that's gone a bit crazy and then swim fastest and then to pick them. So therefore, that comes to the second advantage. You know, earlier on, we talked about nature selecting its fittest. However, we do try to play with nature whenever we have artificial reproductive technology because we just pick that sperm visually. We assume that has a head, a neck, and a tail. Visually, we assume that is swimming a bit faster is the one that we think is the fittest. However, like you described early on, it went through the vigor of nature, but this one just went through a vigor of an embryologist's assessment. So in a way, some people might argue IVF actually take that whole survival of fittest out of the equation.
So are you saying then fertility specialists haven't been picking the best sperm?
Possibly. Because when we actually observe on the Petri dish, we are looking at what looks healthy, what is swimming fast enough, and we'll pick that one. But that is oversimplify what nature has intended. So I would strongly agree that there are a lot more to it for us to pick up the fittest ones. So this is one of the ways to find out. So when we worked out that which one is the one that eventually become out of 50 million, one that actually becomes the most important one, I think there's a lot to learn from there.
So the study now says that the next step in after finding out this whole rhythm thing, the next step is to predict how large numbers of sperm move. And what's the purpose of that?
Well, because, you know, when they all move in rhythm, so there must be something that actually guide them. It might be electric forces.
Right, okay.
Then it might be compositions of the solutes, like, for example, the sodium, the potassium. And then all these are this potential formula to work out what is the most ideal medium for the sperm to survive in, to thrive in, and what is the ideal medium for the actual sperm to fertilize the egg. So all these are really exciting formula to work out what exactly is that formula for it to move in herds in order to achieve its final destination.
Fantastic. So this is sound research, George, which is going to take fertility treatments to the next level, do you think?
Yeah, well, fertility treatment is always very, number one, controversial, and number two, it's very guesswork in some ways. You know, it's difficult to make it extremely science-based because life works in a really mysterious way. In order to get science to understand it, somehow nature is ahead of us all the time. So it is an interesting journey. It is scientifically sound in some way. However, we are still a long, long way from finding that holy grail of how life works and how that miracle happens.
Yes, it is a miracle for sure. I mean, after reading this, I have to say it's a miracle.
So, and also it proves that, you know, most of the men are actually not that purposeless when we swim a bit backwards.
I don't know about that. We still don't know a lot.
In fact, most men probably don't know ourselves what we're doing most of the time. So, you know, poor sperms, it's not no exception.
Okay, coming up next, George and I are going to discuss, it's World Health Day today, George, by chance. And it is themed.
Not by chance. We deliberately planned it.
So I don't know about that. It's themed Depression, Let's Talk. Coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Mira Sivasothi. It's World Health Day today, the 7th of April, and happens to be themed Depression, Let's Talk. It's a coincidence, isn't it, George?
Indeed.
That tomorrow, our Health and Living Life 2017 event, it is very much governed by happiness.
Yeah.
Everything to do with the brain.
And urban happiness. A lot of us living in a very concentrated area, and you know, we're faced with daily financial stress, a whole lot of issues.
Yeah.
It's appropriate for us just to talk about the World Health Day theme depression.
Depression. And you know, I was surprised. Depression is now the leading cause of ill health and disability worldwide.
I'm not 100% surprised, but it still worries me when I read, you know, headlines like that.
And there's a lot of stigma attached to,
especially in Asia, don't
yes.
you think?
Well, I think it's more accepted in the West.
Well, you know, in the West, whenever you...
Everyone's seeing a therapist. Yeah.
That's probably overstretched it a little bit.
It's the reverse here. I mean, you see a therapist and everybody thinks
people think that
you're crazy.
Yeah, that's right. They will probably be thinking you might be locked up, drugged up and that sort of things.
And another challenge, there's lack of investment. Even in high-income countries, almost 50% of people with depression do not get treatment.
Well, I agree with you in many ways that sometimes when I recognize my patient has got depression, either due to pressure or sexual dysfunctions or cancer, whenever we want to refer the patient on to see a psychiatrist for counseling or something like that, and the facilities available for them, it's not really widely available.
Yes. So governments need to act on this because it's proven for every $1 that's invested in moving up treatment for depression and anxiety, it leads to a return of $4. So there are huge amounts of losses being incurred on a household level, on employers, as well as on governments.
Well, I mean, you can just imagine very easily for somebody who's depressed, their productivity decline. If you're a breadwinner for the household, you will actually not bring in the income for the family.
And if you don't address it, it increases your risk of substance abuse disorders, diabetes, heart disease.
And government will end up paying for higher healthcare bills.
Absolutely. So we are going to be discussing mental health tomorrow at our BFM Health and Living Live.
Yeah.
You will be there, George.
Well, I'm discussing the sexual health. We're going to have a sexologist with us.
Absolutely.
Wow.
So join us tomorrow. Registration is still open. You can just log on to bfm.my/health and happy World Health Day.
I promise you that I will also be educational and entertaining tomorrow. So come on.
It's held from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. tomorrow, and just come on down to the Sime Darby Convention Centre. But register first.
Otherwise, you won't get your goodie bags and we won't let you in.
Thank you for joining me today, George.
My absolute pleasure, as usual.
Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Doctor in the House was brought to you by AIA Vitality, a health program that rewards your healthy choices. This program is presented by AIA, a real life company.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.